Hello, I'm Robert Soroka. This is number 0338, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0338. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Mark Cohen, who is the author of Overweight Sensation, The Life and Comedy of Alan Sherman.
Right off the bat, one of the things that was stunning was to learn about his sexual shenanigans, his participation in some pretty way out fun and games between men and women in the early 60s. I didn't know very much about his childhood at all and how crazy his mother and father were and how that drove him into comedy as a refuge from the insanity of his family.
Tammy Gilbert is the author of Courage to Persevere, and she talks about conversations with coworkers. Just how much should you talk about your personal life at work?
When you have someone at work that's constantly gossiping to you about somebody else, about what somebody has shared with them, eventually they will do that to you too. And that's how I was able to tell. I see who in the workplace is very professional and, you know, you can trust them with what you said to them by what they're sharing with you. Because if they're sharing somebody else's secret with me, I know they're going to share my secret with somebody else.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0338 was Robert Soroka, a marketing professor at both McGill University and Dawson College. Thank you very much, Robert, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Delta Airlines flight from Los Angeles to Minneapolis was diverted to Salt Lake City, Utah, as a result of the fistfight among the female flight attendants. Passengers aboard the plane said they witnessed three cabin crew members engaging in a fistfight. They were expelled due to bad behavior. The fight broke out after two flight attendants disagreed about their work responsibilities, and the argument turned violent. A third flight attendant tried to calm them down, but was hit by flying fists. The fight was reported to the captain of the plane, and he decided to make an emergency landing and expel the flight attendants. Passengers, I'm sure, went without peanuts for the rest of the flight. Okay, given what took place, I decided to look up Delta Airlines slogans over the last few years. You know, they've actually been around since 1929, but I thought I'd only go back to the 70s to see if any of their more recent slogans were more appropriate for the current situation at hand. Now, in the 70s, two of their three slogans were, "That's the Delta Spirit," and "Delta, the airline run by professionals." Yeah. Three slogans from the 80s now kind of ring hollow. From 1980, there's, "Airlines are the same, only people make the difference." Yeah. In 1984, it was, "Delta is ready when you are." And in 1987, it was, "We love to fly and it shows." In 1994, it was, "You'll love the way we fly." Perhaps their new slogan should be, "Best two out of three rounds." What do you say? Anyway, moving right along, sometimes it's hard to let go of childhood, and that might be particularly true for people who play baseball for a living, or at least used to. Take former professional baseball player Corey McGinnis. The 26-year-old was allegedly found by police asleep in a Southside business that he had broken into. The company had had a pizza party, and McGinnis found the leftovers in the company fridge. Police found a trail of pizza leading to the back room where McGinnis had built a pillow fort with every chair and sofa cushion he could find in the place. When he was found, he was sound asleep with pizza sauce on his shirt. Aside from the pizza, he is not accused of stealing anything, but he was charged with breaking and entering. Now, seriously, a pillow fort at the age of 26? That certainly is a case of arrested development. I mean, most people haven't made pillow forts by themselves since T-ball. And a couple in Vestavia Hills, Alabama, called police after spotting a man in their driveway late at night wearing only a Ronald Reagan Halloween mask and a strategically placed sock. It was so cold outside that police said he wouldn't last long without any clothes on, said homeowner Bart Yancey. I got a chuckle from it later, but at the time it was very concerning, said his wife Danielle. I don't know what he was planning on doing. At least, she added, I don't think he had a gun on him. Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't be so hasty to jump to any conclusions without at least a cavity search. The director of senior services at Cranston, Rhode Island, resigned in January after a mayor's press conference went badly to publicize a snow removal program that would benefit seniors unable to shovel for themselves. The director, needing a proper example of a beneficiary of the program, instructed a middle-aged male subordinate to unconvincingly don a wig and dress and stand beside the mayor during the announcement. Okay. I'm just curious to know how much arm twisting this guy had to do to get the subordinate into a dress, or was this something the subordinate was gladly prepared to do? That's the real story. And a man stopped to fix his bicycle in Loxahatchee, Florida. He was approached by two men with a gun demanding money. Now, the cyclist said he didn't have any, but said that he would come back the next day, and if they came back tomorrow, that he would be there with money. Now, satisfied, the men got in their car and drove off. The cyclist called police and gave them the description of the men and their car. Officers apprehended the suspects within 15 minutes. Juan Bixby, who was 35, and Julian Lopez, age 27, were charged with attempted robbery with a weapon. Now, normally, we worry that people charged with silly crimes will learn to be more effective in prison, but this time, I don't think that really is a concern here. These two guys are really two dim bulbs. I could have made them the idiot of the day, but I have a much better one coming later on, so that's later in the show. Stick around for that. Police chiefs of six small Ohio towns recently demanded an investigation of Sandusky County Sheriff Kyle Overmeyer. After comparing notes, they learned that Overmeyer had approached each one claiming to be helpful in collecting for disposal their department's confiscated drugs on behalf of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency. Now, the DEA reportedly knew nothing of this. The Ohio Attorney General is investigating. Now, I'm not one into going into lauding criminals in this case, but, you know, you have to admit, it is criminal, but it is ingenious. Criminal, but ingenious. So lock him up, but give him points for style. That's all I'm saying. And we have one more story here in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our next guest. And this is another story where the criminal was maybe not so ingenious. We start off with a quote from a police officer. We can infer they beat a very hasty retreat with a somewhat bitter taste in their mouth. And believe me, when I tell you this story, that quote is an understatement. That's what Laverton, Australia Police Senior Sergeant Heath Souter said, and that bit about the taste might not be a mere figure of speech, trust me. He was talking about one or more individuals who attempted to siphon fuel from a bus, but instead dipped into the vehicle's sewage tank. The culprit may have sucked up some of the contents of the tank. The police sergeant says his agency has absolutely zero interest in recovering the stolen waste, but hoped word of mouth, pardon the pun, would help lead officers to the offender. Oh, I don't know. If there's word going around that someone sucked human waste out of a bus, hasn't he or she been punished enough? I mean, really, do you think he's going to do it again? No, he's probably still washing his mouth out with soap. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Anyone who listened to my old radio show knows that I'm a big fan of Alan Sherman, the late king of parody songs, is probably best known for Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, although he has a complete canon of classic songs. Now, Mark Cohen has written the definitive biography entitled Overweight Sensation, The Life and Comedy of Alan Sherman. And Mark joins us right now via Skype from California. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. There are a lot of fans out there of Alan Sherman, yet to a certain degree he's somewhat of an unknown commodity, at least to younger generations these days. What made you keeper of the Alan Sherman flame? What made you write this definitive book?
Well, I was part of the generation that grew up in the mid to late 60s in New York, where many homes were host to Alan Sherman albums. And by the time I was in high school, in the very late 60s, early 70s, it was common among my friends and myself to play the Alan Sherman albums that had been in our homes and grow to become big fans of his comedy. So years and years and years later, when I wrote this book, it came out a little over 2 years ago, it was spurred by the fact that I was a writer. I was writing, and I was looking for a good subject. And I was very lucky to discover that no one had written a biography of Alan Sherman, which is surprising because when it comes to show business personalities and people with name recognition, nearly everyone had been written about. He had not. And I thought there was an interesting story to tell. And it turned out I was right. I was very fortunate to be able to be the first person to tell the story.
So in doing your research, you're, as you say, a big fan of Alan Sherman. In doing your research, what did you find out about the man that surprised you?
Well, there's a couple of things. For people who haven't read the book, and I'm sure that's a lot of people because it's, you know, just a university press book. Well, right off the bat, one of the things that was stunning was to learn about his the hanky-panky that went on in his life, his sexual shenanigans, his participation in some pretty way-out fun and games between men and women in the early 60s. That was pretty wild. I didn't know very much about his childhood at all, and how crazy his mother and father were. That was fascinating. And how that drove him into comedy as a refuge from the insanity of his family. And it was also wonderful to discover a completely lost body of work of his that he wrote before the first album came out. His first album was My Son the Folk Singer. It appeared in October 1962. But for years before that, he was performing informally at parties parody songs. They were Jewish-themed parodies of songs from the Broadway stage, the Broadway musicals. And they were wonderful. And they were lost for many years. And in my research, I discovered quite a few.
Wow. And I guess one of the reasons they were lost is, unlike some of the songs that we know him for, that he was very successful for, the songs that he did of the Broadway variety were not tunes that were in public domain. Would that be correct?
That's right. So even though it was these Broadway parodies that brought him to the attention of Warner Brothers Records, they were not able to release an album of these songs because they were under copyright. They would have required permission of the copyright holder for the underlying music. That's key, of course, to the parody. And that would not be forthcoming. And even if it was, the price to be paid for the use of the material was unaffordable. So it was out of the question. It was only years later, in 2005, Rhino Records released My Son the Box, a box set of Alan Sherman's recordings, and it included part of his Broadway parodies, and that was his My Fair Lady parodies. Mice on the Box includes 5 or 6 or 7 songs of his Jewish parody of My Fair Lady. And it's terrific. All fans out there would really do themselves a favor to hear it. A number of the songs are on YouTube, I should say.
Is it fair to say that he was such a groundbreaker? I mean, nowadays you have people like Weird Al Yankovic, and it seems to be that many of the musical artists of the day seem to relish the idea that someone would go ahead and parody their songs. That was not the way it was, obviously, when he was parodying Broadway songs back in the day. He was seen not necessarily as a groundbreaker, but to some of these people, I would assume, a nuisance.
Yes, he certainly was. When word got out that he was parodying My Fair Lady and other hits, the creators of these songs were not at all happy about it and were trying to prevent the dissemination of these songs. Parodies were well known, of course, and one of the people that preceded Sherman and that Sherman was clearly influenced by was a Jewish song parodist by the name of Mickey Katz, who was popular in the 1950s. Sherman was doing something, I think, new. And also his early work was explicitly Jewish. He had a Jewish axe to grind in the beginning. He had a program that he wanted to fulfill based on what he saw as one of the problems afflicting his parents and the cultural, there wasn't enough cultural elbow room in 1930s and 40s America, and he was determined to open that up a bit. It's hard for us today to conceive of a time before multiculturalism when every minority or group of any flavor or type has its place in the sun. But when Sherman started doing this, that wasn't the case. And he was important in that respect as well.
You mentioned the fact that he had a difficult childhood. It's not unusual that somebody who is a comedic genius, and I will call Alan Sherman a comedic genius, comes from a tortured past.
That's absolutely right. And I agree with you. Sherman was a comedic genius. And he's been unfairly overlooked by the official arbiters of taste. But what was wonderful to discover while researching the book is how many of our great comedians today remember and admire Alan Sherman. Some of the wonderful things I found while searching around on YouTube, for instance, was a video of Larry David, creator of the Seinfeld show, and then, of course, his own show, at a concert where he was a guest star, just because he's a beloved funny man, not because he could sing. And what did he choose to sing but Shake Hands With Your Uncle Max by Alan Sherman? And then on Seinfeld's own web series, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, there's a segment where he discusses with a friend Alan Sherman. And then, of course, Jason Alexander from the Seinfeld show, who played George, gave me a wonderful blurb for the book because he loved Sherman. So there's 3 out of the top 5 characters of one of the greatest comedy shows of the past 30 years, all identifying themselves as major Sherman fans.
Now, I mentioned his number one song, or his biggest hit, Hello Mother, Hello Father. As classic as that is, for me, it is not my favorite Alan Sherman song. I'm just wondering I'll tell you what mine are, but what are yours?
Well, Shake Hands With Your Uncle Max is way up there. That was phenomenal. I don't know if your listeners know of it, but it's a must. It's a parody of that Irish song that introduces all the Irish names, McCartney and McGilligan and so forth, and substitutes Jewish last names. It's right. A very funny song. And then just wonderful children's type songs like One Hippopotami are terrific songs. you know, there's very few songs of his that I don't like. Well, what's your favorite?
You mentioned one of my three favorites. One is One Hippopotami. I've got to put in there, You Went the Wrong Way, Old King Louie.
Oh, love it.
And my favorite one is Sticks of One and Half Dozen of the Other.
Oh, that's a wonderful medley, a combination of things. Yes, yes. Yeah, no, Sherman went through this incredible creative burst. It's amazing to realize what he did in 12 months. His first album, Folk Singer, appeared in October 62. His second album, My Son the Celebrity, appeared in December 62, just a little over 2 months after the first one. And then his third album, My Son the Nut, that held Hello Mud and Hello Fada, came out in early August 63. So in 10 months, Sherman released three of the greatest comedy albums ever made. Two of them were gold records, My Son the Celebrity and My Son the Folk Singer, both were gold albums. My Son the Nut was the number one record in the country for over 6 or 7 weeks running in the summer and fall of 63. Hello Mudda won a Grammy for comedy song in 63. I mean, it was an incredible burst of comedic creation and genius. And Sherman was in the news not long ago when Al Yankovic recently had a number one best-selling album. And everyone was noting that this was the first time in 50 years that a comedy album was number one on the charts. And the last time it happened was My Son the Nut by Alan Sherman.
We are talking with Mark Cohen, who is the author of Overweight Sensation, The Life and Comedy of Alan Sherman. Can you hang around a few more moments and we'll talk a little more? I got to take a quick break, okay?
Absolutely.
This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
She wheels her wheelbarrow through streets that are narrow. Her barrow is narrow, her hips are too wide. So wherever she wheels it, the neighborhood feels it. Her girdle keeps scraping the homes on each side. In Dublin's fair city, where girls are so pretty, my Molly stands out 'cause she weighs 18 stone. That's 256 pounds. I don't mind her fat, but It's not only that, but she's cockeyed and muscle-bound, Molly Malone. I know a man, his name is Lang, and he has a neon sign. And Mr. Lang is very old, so they call it Old Lang Sign. Oh, what have you done, Billy Sal, Billy Sal? Oh, what have you done, charming Billy? You took almost every cent from the U.S. government, which you spent on fertilizer, which is silly. All day, all night, Cary Grant. That's all I hear from my wife is Cary Grant. What can he do that I can't? Big deal, big star, Cary Grant. Oh, the moon is bright tonight upon the car wash, so I'm having my Volkswagen washed again. But the way things go with me, the way my luck runs, just as soon as they're finished, it will rain. On top of Old Smokey, all covered with hair, of course I'm referring to Smokey the Bear. Here's a famous old folk song that you all know, entitled Aura Lee. Every time you take vaccine, take it orally, as you know the other way is more painfully. My grandfather's clock was the best ever made by the Timex company. Just like the clock John Cameron Swayze displayed last night on the old TV. Oh, it works underwater so perfectly, and it still makes a ticking sound, which my grandfather tried only this afternoon, and that's how the old man drowned. Do not make a stingy sandwich, pile the cold cuts high. Customers should see salami coming through the rye. Oh, I diet all day and I diet all night, it's enough to drive me bats. Got no gravy or potatoes, cause the whole refrigerator's full of polyunsaturated fats. Fairly well, Metrical and the others of that ilk. Let the diet start tomorrow, cause today I'll drown my sorrow in a double malted milk. When you go to the delicatessen store, don't buy the liverwurst. Don't buy the liverwurst. Don't buy the liverwurst. I repeat what I just said before. Don't buy the liverwurst. Don't buy the liverwurst. Oh, buy the corned beef if you must. The pickled herring you can trust. And the lox puts you in orbit, A-OK. But that big hunk of liverwurst has been there since October 1st. And today is the 23rd of May. So when you go to the delicatessen store, don't buy the liverwurst. Don't buy the liverwurst. Don't buy the liverwurst. It'll make your insides awful sore. Don't buy the liverwurst. Don't buy the liverwurst.
That's one of the songs I mentioned just before the break, a classic and a favorite of mine from Alan Sherman. That one is called Sticks of One and Half a Dozen of the Other. We're talking with Mark Cohen, who is the author of Overweight Sensation, The Life and Comedy of Alan Sherman. And we talk about his work, the type of things that he did as a comedic genius. And again, I love using that term when referring to him because I think he was. But he also produced other people's albums, including Bill Cosby's first album. He found Bill Cosby, did he not?
Yes, it's an interesting story. Sherman's great fame in the summer of 63, when his third album, My Son the Nut, came out, led to his being the guest host for Johnny Carson's Tonight Show in August 63. And Bill Cosby had been trying to get on the Tonight Show for a number of months and had not been able to crack that nut. When Sherman was the guest host, Cosby's agent tried yet again and brought either Sherman down to the Greenwich Village to see Cosby's act, or in some other memories, Cosby was brought to the NBC office in New York at that time. At any rate, Sherman heard Cosby's Noah bit, loved it, booked him for the show, and he was an enormous hit. And what's interesting is, at that time, without satellite hookups, the West Coast, California, received the Tonight Show the next day. So Sherman got on the phone immediately after booking Cosby, called up Warner Brothers Records in L.A., said, "Tomorrow you're going to see what New York saw tonight, which is Cosby on television. Make a record deal with him now before everyone in California finds out who he is." And for that tip that Warner Brothers took, Sherman was given a slice of the revenues that came from several albums from Cosby. And not only was Sherman named the producer of several Cosby albums, but he also benefited financially from the sales.
That's an amazing story. Unfortunately, he didn't have a long and illustrious life. I guess part of it might have been his own doing.
Yes, actually, I found a number of quotes from people who knew him and liked him very much that all agreed he was one of the most self-destructive people they had ever met. Sherman was clearly not taking care of himself, not planning on a long life. Besides his extraordinary overeating, which caused health problems, he was also a very heavy drinker and a very heavy smoker. So those three problems combined led to terrific problems with his health. Even as early as his college years at the University of Illinois, he was having emphysema problems, breathing problems. On his fourth album, Alan in Wonderland, on the liner notes on the back, it notes that Alan needed an oxygen tank to breathe. So, and he was a 38-year-old man at the time. So he was a very, very unhealthy man who was not interested in taking care of himself. He had a very, very dim view of adult life. He was very reluctant to enter adult life and behave like an adult. His experience with his parents as a child gave him a view of adult life that was very, very negative. So he died in 1973, just a few days before his 49th birthday. And that was of heart failure. And it was a very short life.
I just wonder where his life and career could have gone had he lived.
Well, actually, there's a hint of what that could have been. So that we don't end with this terrible note of sadness about his early death. It's fascinating. Another fascinating thing that I discovered was he was continually working on new comedy up till his dying day. He wrote, near the end of his life, a book-length children's story using his own children's real first names. And the book was an attempt to create a entertaining children's story that teaches children that life is really fair. There is justice in life despite the hardships that appear as evidence to the contrary. So he was writing very thoughtful and interesting comedy at the end. And on the night he died, he was reviewing a recording that he had made of a new comedy bit. It wasn't musical. It was kind of a long spoken comedy bit that was a parody of, well, it was inspired by Casey at the Bat, is what he said. But instead of taking place in the world of baseball, it was the world of golf. And he had this long, funny monologue about golfing. And it was really, really very funny. So he kept working on comedy up till the moment he died. But I think that children's book, which is a very, very interesting unpublished book, was an indication that he was not exhausted creatively at all, and that he might have gone in some very new directions that might have surprised a lot of fans, but probably would have won a lot of new fans because it was something completely new.
Mm. Again, I will say he was a comedic genius. The book, again, is Overweight Sensation, The Life and Comedy of Alan Sherman. It's written by Mark Cohen. Mark, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Not at all. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Mark Cohen, author of Overweight Sensation, The Life and Comedy of Alan Sherman. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0338, and you'll find links to Mark's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Can a radio broadcast about a lawsuit actually have an impact on the outcome of that lawsuit? If you ask plaintiff lawyer Robert Hilliard, the answer would be a resounding yes. He was preparing to go to trial with a high-profile lawsuit against General Motors over its faulty ignition switches. GM had already admitted responsibility in thousands of ignition lawsuits and settled them out of court for nearly $2 billion. But the company is contesting some claims it views as suspicious, and Hilliard's lawsuit was seen as a bellwether case. That is, until a real estate agent in Tulsa, Oklahoma heard about it on the radio. The agent recognized the name of Hilliard's client as a scam artist who once cheated him in a real estate deal, and because it was relevant to this case, he reported it to the company. Let's be fair, it didn't take the company long to reveal the plaintiff's fraudulent activity in court, and the lawsuit has now been dismissed. Talk about the power of radio. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come on the program, we will talk about water cooler discussions around the workplace. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. Stay tuned for that. Plus, lots more Stuff File news right here, right now on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. The smarter way to listen to radio. John Sherman went to the Hales Corners, Wisconsin police to file a complaint. $300 had gone missing from his business, Oriental Massage. Detectives launched an investigation and confronted the thief, who turned informant and said that he took the money after an employee took money from him after a sex act. Undercover detectives booked massages, and sure enough, they were offered extra services afterward from the ladies at all four branches of Sherman's businesses, which were located in St. Francis, Franklin, Greenfield, and Hales Corners. It's unclear whether Sherman has been charged. The women involved, police say, all appear to have fled home to China. Before that, they all lived together in a cramped apartment above a Chinese restaurant in Milwaukee called ho-hos. You know, I usually write a punchline for these stories, but seriously, do I need one here? I mean, it just writes itself. I said they were staying upstairs of a Chinese restaurant called Ho-Ho's. What more do I need to add? Really. Deputies in Polk County, Florida, received a tip that 31-year-old Alton Trowell was using his Facebook page to sell moonshine. An undercover detective contacted Trowell through Facebook and allegedly negotiated a purchase of 12 pints of 192-proof grain alcohol in mason jars for $240. The detective then met 31-year-old Christy Komkowitz and 20-year-old Dalton Ridlin in a parking lot where the alleged exchange took place, and the two were arrested. Komkowitz told detectives she purchased the booze from Richard Lott, who was 48, who was later arrested too. Trowell had been arrested the night before on unrelated charges. Yeah, all this from a Facebook posting. You know, something tells me some people are about to get unfriended. By the way, I checked out Alton's Facebook page. You can too. It's still up there. It's Alton Trowell, AltonTrowell. I checked his Facebook page. He's not a bright boy. And according to his page, he's actually in a relationship with Christy Komkowitz. What a lovely, lovely couple. Just pillars of the community. Yeah. One more quick story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Even though concealed carry gun permit holders in Texas can now open carry, pistol-packing women concerned with fashion are not limited to traditional firearms in ordinary cowboy holsters. An online company, The Well-Armed Woman, yes, that's the actual name of the company, offers such carry options as stylish leggings, lace waistbands, and an array of underarm and bra holsters, even an in-cup model called the Marilyn, in leopard print and pastel colors. However, a woman's body shape and size may be more important shopping considerations, according to the company's founder. A 32A bust could not conceal a Glock 19 very well, nor would a 42 double D or larger front allow for effective cross-draw carry. It's vital information to know, I'm sure. Oh, the trials and tribulations of a pistol-packing mama. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Everyone knows you should never share your salary with your coworkers, but what else is best to keep secret and to yourself? Tammy Gilbert, an author, nurse, and MBA holder who experienced bullying and betrayal at work, devotes an entire chapter to the topic in her new book, Courage to Persevere, a compelling story of struggle, survival, and triumph. Tammy joins us on the line right now from Chicago to talk about it. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, I mentioned in the introduction that everyone knows they shouldn't share their salary with coworkers, but you also find situations where there are chatty Cathys in the group who will just simply ask you, so what do you make?
Yeah, you know, my philosophy is that you always remember that your workplace is like a stage. You must perform and act your part no matter what, and you must maintain your professionalism. You know, unless so you have developed a trusted friendship with somebody at your workplace, there is just certain things that you should not be sharing. For example, maybe your personal life. There's no sense in discussing how bad your husband is treating you or your boyfriend or your girlfriend. And I just think those conversations should be safe for your trusted friends.
One of the things, though, some people will say is that, you know, the core of their trusted friends come from their workplace or that's where the friendships develop. So I guess it's what you're saying is there's a fine line to decide who to trust and who not to trust, because sometimes the people you get in contact with who become your close and trusted friends are the people you either go to school work, go to work with, because that's the people you're around the most.
Yeah, you know how I can tell the difference is that I don't know if you ever heard that saying about a dog that carries the bone will bring the bone. So when you have someone at work that constantly gossiping to you about somebody else, about what somebody have shared with them, and, you know, all telling you what they are doing to another person, eventually they will do that to you too. You know, they will. So you asking about fine line, and that's how I was able to tell. You know, I see who in the workplace is very professional, and you know, you can trust them with what you said to them by what they're sharing with you. Because if they're sharing somebody else's secret with me, I know they're going to share my secret with somebody else. So that's how I distinguish who to trust and who not to.
You wrote your book, Courage to Persevere, and you had, as I mentioned in the introduction, an entire chapter devoted to this topic. I also mentioned the fact that you experienced betrayal and bullying at work. Can you share some of the situations you went through?
Well, I have personally experienced the downside of sharing my personal life with the entire office. There was a time that I was having a problem with, it was a boyfriend at the time. And the next thing you know, somebody else was asking me, oh, so how was your issue with your boyfriend? I'm like, well, how did you find out? And also, the biggest betrayal was one time I was trying to apply for another job, another position within the same organization. And I told someone who I thought was my friend, because we have lunch together every single day, and we talk outside work and things like that. So I told her, you know, I'm applying for this position. And the next thing I know, she had shared that with somebody else who was interested in the same position, who quickly applied for the same position. And when I found out, I just felt betrayed, because I thought I could trust her. And there was other question you wanted me. What was the second question?
Well, no, I was just asking if you had felt betrayal at work, and also bullying was the other thing.
Oh, yeah. So that was the betrayal, you know, with my coworkers. And the bullying at work, mainly it could come from the coworkers. One of the coworkers just liked to intimidate. And then some of my experience, or majority of my bullying experience at work, came from my boss. And, you know, your boss has a power. And I just don't think that they should misuse that power, you know. And in terms of threatening you, if you don't do this, I'm going to write you off. If you don't do this, you could get fired. And, you know, just threatening and intimidating and manipulating. And that came from my boss. So that was my bullying experience. And what I wanted to share is that, you know, I found out later, of course, that's not right. You know, there are people in authority that you could share that with. And I know at the time I didn't share that because I was afraid for my job. But there's a way that this could be shared, and you don't have to worry about retaliation.
Now, going back to that situation where you were talking about a coworker you ate lunch with every day, you talked to this person outside of work, who then betrayed you by telling someone else that you were applying for a job. First of all, there are two levels here. Could it possibly be an innocent situation where they didn't think that, or they just didn't simply think. They didn't think that telling somebody else you were applying for a job was in a sense a betrayal.
Well, when someone tell you, oh, you know what, I appreciate if you don't share this with anyone, I'm applying for this job. So that's what.
Okay,
that's how you can tell too. Yeah, because I have asked her not to share it.
Okay.
And then that's another thing too. When someone comes to you and say, oh, you know what, don't tell anybody because the person told me not to tell anybody.
Right.
Again, that's another sign that you shouldn't be sharing your secret with that person.
Again, backing up, you're talking about the idea of you know, not telling too much information to people at work, being their coworkers. But again, when they become friends, because you mentioned that you it wasn't just a situation where you work with this person, you had lunch with this person every day. You actually conversed with them outside of work. Did you see them outside of work? Did you socialize outside of work? Did you have a friendship that was beyond the working relationship?
Well, when I see that person outside work, it was always like in the group, like a work group. So it wasn't like a personal, like where we just meet for lunch, you know, me and her as a friend. But it was always, you know, with the work group. Maybe it was somebody's birthday and we decided to take that person out for a birthday, or somebody's getting married. So, yeah, I mean, this was a person that, you know, that I see outside work, but as a work-related group.
Okay.
Yeah.
So don't share personal information. What do you consider to be, because I know one of the things you do in your book, you offer guidelines about what is acceptable water cooler discussion. So what kinds of things are safe topics to talk about at work?
Well, you know, we do want to develop friendship at work, or even to be cordial and be on a friendly term. So what I would say is acceptable to discuss, you know, my son is in a basketball traveling team. So that's something. I said, oh, you know, what did you do this weekend? Oh, you know, my son had a basketball, you know, they won or they lost. You know, we went out to dinner. You know, what did you do? So certain things is acceptable because you don't want to be non-social, and you don't want to be seem like you're kind of arrogant. So you do want to share some information. But those are information that it doesn't matter who knows. You know, so that's my guideline. For example, my relationship with my husband, whatever goes on, I discuss that issue with my trusted friend. What that happened, that's not at work. And then I do have some people at work that I'm very, very close to, and there's some things that I share with them, and there's some things that I don't share with them. So if personal, you just have to gauge that person, because I wouldn't say don't share your personal information with just anybody. You because everybody's different. With some people, you shouldn't do that. So, you know, like a general, going back to your question, like what is acceptable to share, or like a water cooler, things about your children, things, you know, just anything, thing, general things about your outside life is acceptable. But just deep thing, for example, that, oh, this weekend we went in and bought a BMW, but guess what? I spent all my savings. You know, we're in debt. We don't have any money. So those are the things that you want to keep to yourself, because eventually, one day, if you say, oh, you know what? I don't have change to buy lunch. And yeah, that's because you bought a BMW. So you get what I'm going with?
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. The book is called Courage to Persevere, A Compelling Story of Struggle, Survival, and Triumph. Tammy, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. I guess bottom line is use some common sense, and if you wouldn't tell a total stranger, don't tell somebody at work, correct?
Exactly.
Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Tammy Gilbert, author of Courage to Persevere, A Compelling Story of Struggle, Survival, and Triumph. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0338, and you'll find links to Tammy's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have an Idiot of the Day coming up in just a matter of moments, but I got one more, let's say, idiot-adjacent story to share with you before we get there. In January, 45-year-old Donald Chip Pugh, wanted by police in Lima, Ohio, and Columbus, Georgia, on several charges, texted Lima cops a photo of himself to use as a mugshot because he was dissatisfied with the one that was on the department's website. "That one is terrible," he wrote. Well, terrible as it might have been, it was clear enough for authorities in Escambia County, Florida, who arrested Pugh a few days later. You know, I really wanted to make this guy the idiot of the day because that is a pinhead thing to do, but I think we're dealing with immense vanity rather than stupidity, so I'll let him slide on that one. However, the idiot of the day is coming your way right here, right now. Yes, boys and girls, it's now time for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the idiot of the day.
And we have a two-for-one deal this time around as we bring you two lunkheads with similar stories. The first is under the headline of chutzpah. 53-year-old Michael Leonard was charged in December with stealing a package that moments earlier had been dropped off by a courier. The delivery was to the Prince George's County, Maryland police station. And Leonard, hanging around in the station to register as a sex offender, walked out with the package when no one was looking. However, a station surveillance camera caught his face. And number two, 23-year-old Sean Lyons, wanted on an Upper Darby, Pennsylvania arrest warrant since October as a drug dealer, was arrested in January at the police station where officers recognized him when he came to give information as a victim of an unrelated hit-and-run accident. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're a criminal, would you commit a crime at a police station or drop by a police station to report another crime? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0338. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0338. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show online on the air as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.